Good evening, everyone, and welcome to a most auspicious occasion, the anointing, empowering, condemning of a new teacher. celebrating this tonight with Springs Mountain Sangha and Wet Mountain Sangha from Pueblo, we have an honored guest from California, David Weinstein Yoshi, from Pacific Zen Institute in the Oakland Division, and Sarah Bender Sensei, who is the resident teacher here at Springs Mountain Sangha. And this is Andrew, I think most of you know that. My name is Joan Sutherland, and I'm the founding teacher of the Open Source, which is the network of communities of which Springs Mountain Sangha is a part. All three of us, Sarah and David and I, have been involved in Andrew's training over the years, so he can blame us. And having done our best to destroy him, we now welcome him as a colleague. It's really a pleasure for us to be welcoming him. So we will begin. I think you all have programs in a sense of where we go. We're going to begin tonight with the weirdest thing we do, which is an invocation and a water blessing, which is traditional at big events like this. Subtle, mysterious, wonderful, the mother of all things, the ancient seven Buddhas and all Buddhas yet to be born, earth and water, flame and wind. Bodhi tree and morning star, all grandmothers, grandfathers, the spirits of this place, all the ancestors of our way, in the still halls, in the fragrant tea shops, in the sake bars. All two-leggeds, four-leggeds, the nations who creep and crawl, the nations who fly and swim, all beings everywhere, attend us now, bless this ceremony. The humans are making a teacher tonight.
Dhammam saranam gacchami. gacchami. Sangham saranam gacchami. Buddham dhammam sangham.
From Tao Te Ching. Look, and it can't be seen. Listen, and it can't be heard. Reach, and it can't be grasped. Above, it isn't bright. Below, it isn't dark. Seamless, unnameable, it returns to the realm of nothing. Form that includes all forms. Image without an image, subtle beyond all conception. Approach it, and there is no beginning. Follow it, and there is no end. You can't know it, but you can be it. At ease in your own life. Just realize where you come from. This is the essence of wisdom.
We three will say a few words and make some presentations to Andrew. And Sarah, would you like to start?
Okay. So with those wonderful words about subtle and, you know, simple and elegant and stuff, I'm just nervous to you. And so open up and then I'll talk about it.
Use it on that.
This is sort of two versions of one thing. And there are stories. So this is to cover your poem. A real story that might help a little bit. And so I want to talk about the pieces. Okay. So starting where? Maybe starting with this. This is a pine image, yeah? And it reminded me of the koan that says, the breeze blows through the old pines. The closer it is, the better the sound. And then the bamboo, I thought, is reminded me of work in the room, and that it's very reassuring sometimes to remember that it may not matter so much what I do or say in the room, but I can count on a stone against bamboo. And these are cranes, and I think of them as calling crane from the 61 hexagram in the Book of Change. The great bird mother who calls her children out of the entanglements of life. And this picture, which has flowers and cloud together, and water, I think, or sky, or water, or sky. And the image, what came to me there was on a clear, clear day, the lotus emerges from a cloud. And then this is you. Your name is on there.
Yes.
Hello.
So, the tassels, but the tassels need to get reattached.
All right. There's another part.
Then there's another part. Okay. So, and this one's, this one came along, and I just had to get it. It's not finished, okay? I had to get it, and then you mentioned your dream. And so I thought, oh, all right, this is why I had to get this piece of cloth. And I got one that for me that matches. So we both have these. And to me, these are sky bandits. I don't know what they are to you or to anybody else.
Looks like they're flying in the sky to me.
Yeah.
Wow.
So my thought was that we could actually make that I could get a border on that in the back, and this could be in the back, and could be another, maybe a little bit smaller cover for your closet. Yes. In which case, you'll have this one for a raincoat.
Yes.
So with all my love. Thank you for undertaking this, whatever it is.
Yeah, that's my question.
Seems to me like the first time I met you almost the first time I met you, I think it was a retreat that had been at Pines. You asked if you could take refuge, and I thought, well, that's kind of strange. I mean, I just met him, he's just come to us to practice, he wants to take refuge. And what was even stranger was that I thought it was a good idea. I knew it was a good idea. I could feel it, you know? And so this is sort of, today feels like, you know, on the same track. You know? It's like what I felt then, I feel now. It has not changed, only deepened over the years, so it's great. And I remember, because you asked, for the precepts, I had to think up a name for you. But actually, it wasn't difficult at all, because the name just came to me almost immediately. It was Bright Wave. And because you are very bright, and I really appreciate your brightness in the way, your expression of the Dharma manifests that brightness. So, I have a gift also. But I didn't have time to wrap it up, and I didn't want you to know what it was before I gave it to you. So usually this is done in private, and it's probably the first time in the history of Zen that the secret transmission of the stick is going to be done in public, so I will show you how it's done. this was the stick that was given to me when I first started teaching from John Tarrant. And it's an old friend, and I can't think of anybody else that way.
But I'm not wearing socks.
That comes to me. That's when you give it away. And I have one other smaller gift. Which is a it is a golden shit. And this is something that you can find in Japan at five and dime stores and things like that. And it's based on a play on words where the Japanese word, the child's word for shit is unko. And a homonym for that is good luck. Same pronunciation, unko. So making use of that play on words and in recognition of what's just really true, and as you will find out as you teach more, that you know, shit is gold.
Wonderful. I should wear it with pride.
You can put it on your altar. Glue it on your hand. And I think finally, I just wanted to say to all of you, really, you know, as Joan said, Sarah and Joan and I have been involved in Andrew's teaching, and so have you. And it's, you know, the Sangha teaches also. Sangha makes teachers, in a way. And so this moment of celebration is not just for Andrew, I think it's for the whole community. Springs Mountain Sangha and Pueblo and Oakland and Santa Rosa and wherever this way of practicing Zen is being done, wherever this dream of what Zen really is being dreamed. Yeah, it's a great feeling. Thank you.
Thank you.
I think it's a good moment to embody that transmission from the Sangha to the new teacher, and Mary will help do that. And I just want to say, as she does that, you mentioned that Andrew has the Dharma name Bright Wave. And when I was considering all of this, it occurred to me that Bright Wave is a beautiful Dharma name, and that a teacher should be called Bright Ocean. So Andrew's new name is Bright Ocean Sensei. This is his first public appearance, and very well do the honors.
This Rakusu was made by your community. There are stitches in this by many people, all eager to put in a stitch or two or a lot more. And it was really a beautiful feeling to have people going out of their way to put stitches in this for you.
Yeah. Thank you all.
Should I open it?
Yes, you
put it on his head.
Yeah, let's do this. This is the robe of freedom, the bare field,
the blessings.
I receive
the Tathagata's teachings, which wakes all beings.
Thank you all. You're already woven into me, and now it's just more official. One more for the pile, too.
Have a great treasure, which is the koan tradition. And in these frail vessels that we all are, we want to receive and preserve and transmit something that we think of as one of the treasures of world culture. Not too many people know that yet, but we hope to make that more apparent through our work. So it is my deep, deep pleasure to again give an embodiment of this house treasure to Andrew right there in the thing, which is in the form of the koan notes, the notes, commentaries, and responses that have been given in our tradition for 6 generations now, and Andrew is the 7th generation. So these are the answers, for what it's worth, that I gave, the answers that John Tarrant gave, the comments of Yamada and Yasutani Roshis, and even some of the comments of Harada Roshi, our founder in the mid-19th century. So I cannot imagine, and I mean this from the bottom of my heart, I cannot imagine better hands to be placing this tradition than in Andrew's. His dedication to the way, his sincerity and perseverance and brightness, as David was saying, is very moving to me, and I know that the tradition will be dreamed on in some amazing way by him. So with tremendous love and gratitude for your companionship, I give you the wisdom of the ancestors. A wordy group we are.
Right, Ocean Sensei. You need to pull this?
Yes.
Pull that out. So, yeah, this is a koan card for sure.
Dearest Andrew, from warm hand to warm hand, the ancestral teachings pass down the generations. Now they come to you. Now they come to you. Make them yours. Suck the marrow from these bones. Let them nourish you. And once you have them, really have them, dream the teachings on for your time. The great koan dragon smiles in her sleep tonight. The ancestors dance and call, little bodhisattva. Your companions welcome you. May this auspicious turn of the wheel benefit all of our relations. With great love.
And fold it back up too.
Test.
Or I don't. I didn't know there was origami is part of our koan. This is also new. Receiving gifts and knowing how to place them elegantly. Hopefully.
Shan. I've always loved friends of the way. Friends of the way I've always held dear. Meeting a traveler with a silent spring, or greeting a guest talking Zen. Talking of the unseen on a moonlit night. Searching for truth until dawn, when 10,000 reasons disappear and we finally see who we are.
Thank you. So now it's my turn to start destroying things.
This is the Japanese term for a teacher's talk is a teisho, which means presentation of the shout. So this is Andrew's first presentation of the shout.
Thank you all for making this possible. It's truly not something that happens alone, as we say often. You might imagine, or not, but I've been reflecting upon my path and how I've gotten to this particular point. And it's really amazing that the talk I prepared tonight, the stuff I've been discovering over the last few days, coincide with what I wanted to talk about. So it's wonderful that things come together and they seem to all be saying, yes, yes, this is what you're meant to talk about. So. I have a few layers of things that have come together quite nicely, but the first is just how small of a radius I've had of my practice. When I think about the fact about 18 years ago was the moment where I recognized that spiritual spark lit up and turned into a fire, and then I started really searching and wanting to figure out where I wanted to be or find my home. And it turns out, literally a block away to the south is where we live, my mom and I. Just a block from this place. It was green then, it's a purple building now. So 18 years ago, a block away, you could say this started in its more directional, intentional searching and leading to this place. And then, within that same year, we moved a couple miles up the road, so not far, and I traveled over to India. I just had to, and my parents were okay. Halfway around the world. What are you doing? But I was there, and I bought this white shirt there, and it still fit enough. So I'm still here. And I grew up here in Colorado Springs, so. So far, there's this really close-knit life I've had to this area. The park here, I walked up and down all the time. Then, when I came to the Sangha, 1999, we had Saturday mornings, we didn't have Wednesday mornings, and we didn't sit Saturdays at show. We sat at the Susan B. Anthony Annex, which is just one block that way from this place. And then we've gathered at Shove and gathered here. So much has taken place. I'm looking at my path in these really, just a pretty small radius. But there's also been the moments where the trajectory is more of a straight line out further. Went to school in Greeley, went to school in Gunnison. We lived in Boulder for a while, I lived in Key West. So there's these moments of these straight lines, but everything kept coming back to here, and it's this place where I live and I do my day-to-day that the ground widened and became that radius of support, and so didn't have to go far. But that's interesting, because when we come to practice, sometimes our gate to enter is that we have so far to go. We need to get from here to there, and how am I ever going to do it? So. And your there could be anything. You don't really have to be practicing this path to have a there that you're trying to get to. But a common there for our way is enlightenment. And so the title of my talk tonight is Discarding Enlightenment. I want to throw it out. And that came about a few years ago. It was at Sarah's house. We were doing koans. And I don't remember the conversation, the koan we were talking about. I just remember I had said something. And then Sarah said, well, say more, as we often do in koans. And was just talking about the path and, you know, this progression and moving forward. And I was like, I don't really feel like I'm changing. And the phrase that came out of my mouth, which happens sometimes, I'll say something that I don't really know what I'm saying, but it's interesting enough that I want to remember it. But the phrase that came out was, there is getting closer to here. And I was like, huh, what did that mean? But I held on to it and explored it. And so I want to talk a little bit more about that tonight, about what is this process of there getting closer to here. I do have little notes. Oh, good, I'm on track. I want to start off with, I'm going to throw some ancestors in. Well, they're going to jump in here a little bit. But coming from that gate of beginning to practice and wanting to progress and find your there, to seek your enlightenment or whatever it is, you might encounter words from Dawe. He says, do you want to know what the truth is? It is true thusness, Buddha nature, enlightenment, nirvana. Do you want to know what the disease is? It's arbitrary conception, inverted thoughts and perceptions, greed, hatred, erroneous views. Even so, apart from the inversions of arbitrary conceptions, there is no truly so Buddha nature. Apart from greed, hatred, and erroneous views, there is no enlightenment or nirvana. And I know when I encountered those kind of phrases in the beginning of my practice, I was like, yeah, right. You're fooling me here. You're saying it to try to get me to think that it's that. All that I am now is it. But I was intrigued enough to give it a shot and go forward. And so I think that approach of the practice is what I'm calling right now a clearing kind of path, where the sense is we need to clear out who we are, our entanglements, our hang-ups. We need to clear out and work on those things to open up a space so that something can happen and we can move forward and something can transform. And the idea is that in order to do that, we must work on clearing out all this stuff first, so it's hard work. And we have all of our ideas about what our there is and a whole lot more ideas about what our not there is, looking at ourselves. Well, this is definitely not it, and it's not that, and it couldn't possibly be that, all this stuff that I do throughout my day, so it must be something much bigger. And so our practice is really good at looking at those entanglements. We sit down and we do meditation and we begin to work on those, the knots, the NOTs and the KNOTs, the knots of ourselves, and loosen them up with that, again, that idea that we have to do this in order to move forward, and if we don't do it, we're not going to be able to move forward. And it probably feels, in a way, yes, we are starting to move forward, we're loosening things up, but at the same time, it can feel like I'm not making any progress at all. And so what's this moving forward thing, and what exactly am I doing here if I feel like I'm getting worse? And we stick with it because others tell us, keep going. This is okay. This is how it is. But then what struck me with this approach, if we have our here, which is not it, and a there, which is it, we have those two points. For some reason, math was not my strong subject in school, but this one lesson I learned in math one time about taking two points and you dissect them exactly in the middle. They get, you know, then they're shorter, and you dissect them in the middle, and they're shorter. And the teacher said, no matter how many times you dissect it, those two points are never going to connect. You can go on for infinity and make it as minute as possible, but because you started with two points, it is impossible to join them. So that struck me in this practice, is if we're really looking for something out there, a point that isn't here, we can try and we can go and we can get closer and closer, yet there's another move that needs to be made in order for us to really be able to meet it. Then I wanted to drop in some words from Yuan Wu, who is Da Wei's teacher. Maybe at this point they come along nicely in this part of the path. Though delusion and enlightenment differ, their underlying inconceivable reality is one and the same. So here he's again saying, they look different, but the thing that's beneath them is the same. What really catches me here, though, is that the inconceivable part, which is saying the reality beneath them cannot be thought of. So you can't think of what the there is, because that's a conception. You cannot picture it, you can't describe it, because the reality is inconceivable. Likewise, you can't know what it not is, because that's a conception as well. So if you're thinking it is that and it's not that, there's a reality beneath both of those that is vivid and alive that you can't conceive of, you can only experience. So when I was looking at that kind of transition into looking at, well, both of these are kind of hindrances to hold on to these conceptions, I felt it was more of an expanding path that begins instead of a clearing out, an expanding path where we realize at the same time that we were working on our knots and disentangling them and loosening them, our what it is was also being loosened and disentangled, and whatever requirements we might say, well, maybe it doesn't have to be that shiny. Maybe I can drop that condition off of what I think there is, what enlightenment is. And that's that move of there getting closer to here. You know, it's not so far from me anymore. I don't have to be able to be calm and peaceful and not have any bad emotions. It's like, oh, I tested it out. Look, I can be angry and things are still okay. So the there is closer to here, and the not there is getting closer to here. We're loosening things up around them. Fewer restrictions and requirements on what our life must be. And then the other thing is that we start to realize that something else we're waiting to happen when we're doing that clearing out in order for something to happen, we start to see that maybe there's something that was happening all the time. We were so focused on trying to clear ways for it to happen, we didn't see it. And we realized, if I loosen up my grip, if I'm backing up and expanding my path, things are actually happening and I'm a part of it. It's a part of me. And then we have those moments where we drop into, I'll just call it a non-comparative state, where we feel whole and complete, and any ideas of I'm not or I want to be are gone, and we just are. And we feel the completeness of that moment. And then perhaps we look at those words that we thought they were tricking us and realize they weren't tricking us after all. They were telling the truth, those ancestors. So then I brought in another ancestor who speaks to that, Daito, a poem he wrote. Delusion, enlightenment, just fox words, fooling Zen people everywhere. I think we'd take out Zen, just fooling people everywhere. So the fox words are the fact that they weren't fox words after all. They were true words. We foxed them. We were the foxes. And so when I was thinking of that fox today, I remembered another thing from many years ago, a book that, The Education of Little Tree. My mom bought that for me and my sister, and we're supposed to read it every year at Christmas. I don't think we kept up with that. But there's a story about a fox and a hound in there, and what was interesting to me was I was getting this image in my own experience of my life of this small radius of practice area with these lines shooting through it, but that circular motion happening. And I felt the same way with that path I talked about when you're clearing and trying to make a linear progression versus that expanding, where it is that radius getting wider and wider, creating more territory to hold everything. So then this fox came up, and I remembered that the hound is the one who goes in a straight line trying to catch the fox. But the fox knows that his home is right in the middle. He knows exactly where it is. And he knows if he goes right to it, the hound's going to catch him. So the fox runs in a big circle and slowly winds his way back down to get to the home. And the hound runs in a straight line. And this all happens in the same field there. So it occurred to me that we are all at once our own fox and our own hound and our own home. Always right there in the middle is our own home. And we need each other. We need our fox and hound qualities. That's how we find our home. And I think what the practice does for me is it creates a ground beneath that ground that holds it all. It holds the home, and it holds the fox, and it holds the hound. With no problem, no conflict. Everybody come, everybody's welcome to play and seek and find. And by going through that dance of loosening the knot is and loosening what it is and back and forth and getting there closer to here, it's like the energy that we were using to hold those other things back and push them away and reach for those things that we thought were out of our reach, we get to use that energy to expand, and we don't have to reach as far, we don't have to hold back as hard. So our arms are then free to embrace it all. Fox, hound, and home. All at once. And that's that wonderful, wonderful thing that we just get to drop into by doing this practice. So I'll close with just something from the other day. One of those strange statements that came out of my mouth again. That I'm now passing on to you to consider and put it in your mouth and in your ear and then see what it's like. I was part of a panel with somebody from a different Buddhist tradition, and we're taking some questions, and one person asked, "How do you know when you're enlightened?" Luckily, the other person answered first. So she talked, and pretty quickly, my first response was, "Don't even go there." I was able to soak it in a little bit, and what came out, and this is that "huh" phrase, when it was my turn, was like, "Well, I don't really know, but perhaps you start to get a glimpse of it when you realize that you're less and less concerned about the fact that you're not enlightened." So, thank you.
Hori Zenji, Bodhisattva's vow. When I look deeply into the real form of the universe, everything reveals the mysterious truth of the Tathagata. This truth never fails. In every moment and every place, things can't help but shine with this light. Realizing this, our ancestors gave reverent care to animals, birds, and all beings. Realizing this, we ourselves know that our daily food, clothing, and shelter are the warm body and beating heart of the Buddha. How can we be ungrateful to anyone or anything?
even though someone may be a fool, we can be compassionate. If someone turns against us, speaking ill of us and treating us bitterly, it is best to bow down. This is the Buddha appearing to us, finding ways to free us from our attachments, the very ones that have made us suffer again and again and again. Now, on each flash of thought, a lotus flower blooms, and on each flower, a Buddha. The light of the Tathagata appears before us, soaking into our feet. May we share this mind with all beings so that we and the world together may grow in wisdom.
Andrew invited a few people to speak or question him. Who knows? So beware. If you want to back out now, we can do that. And so a few people will speak now. And I know that other people have things they'd like to say to Andrew and have brought gifts, and so when we have the reception, you'll have a chance to speak directly with him if you wish. So Frank, would you start, and then would you invite people?
I will.
Thank you.
So I'm Frank Actis, a member of the Sangha, and get to be head of practice for the retreat that's wrapped around this ceremony. Wow. So, Andrew, I've known you about 9 years. I've known you as long as I've been with this Sangha and as long as I've had this practice. So, I kind of equate Sangha practice Andrew. So, thank you for that. And I think I share that view with others in our community as well. Some of the things that I personally just really appreciate is your steadiness. Even when times are tough, and it's amazing. Your hard work and your really light, skillful touch. One of the wisest things that you've taught me as we've been working on head of practice is, well, maybe you shouldn't say anything. And those of you who know me, that's pretty hard. and along with that is this guidance of yours that allows me to work on what I need to do for my own practice, and you help me discover what that is. And allows me to take that on from there. And you don't take up my problem. You may bring something up to light, and then it's my problem. And I think that's just a great skill to create that space for me. So I'm sure there's an example in here, and yes, there is. But over 9 years, the example that came to me is really from today. Because, I don't know, what else is there? and this is really kind of, it's a very ordinary story, but it kind of grabbed me. So after lunch, I ran into you. You didn't come searching for me. And you said, well, Frank, by the way, you left the candles burning on the altar. And my job here is to take care of the altar and, light and turn, blow out the candles. And it's like, and this isn't quite the first time he's had to say that. First time today. And then he said, and he had this little grin on, but I didn't blow him out. And and that's your teaching right there.
Yeah.
Is, you brought something to light, and then you handed this to me, and then it's mine to deal with, and you've done this not just in working with retreats, but over and over. And you as a teacher, boy, if you can keep that up, I think that'll just be wonderful for yourself. But also, because you don't, even though you have a stick, you don't beat it into us, but you help us see it on our own. So thank you very much. And I was going to say good luck, but there's no luck about it. All right, so next on the list is another a member of our sangha, Terry Crane.
Andrew, I apologize for reading this instead of
dancing it.
Definitely. Here's an ancient story from our tradition. Great Master Ma and Bai Zheng were taking a walk when a wild duck flew by. "What is that?" asked the master. "A wild duck," said Bai Zheng. "Where did it go?" "It flew away." The master twisted Bai Zheng's nose, and Bai Zheng cried out in pain. "Why, it didn't fly away after all," said the master. When I first started coming to koan gatherings at Sarah's house, Andrew was always sitting up front next to her, keeping time with the bell, so I naturally assumed he was another teacher. And his thoughtful, heartfelt, evocative contributions to our discussion, his warm, engaging, even challenging presence, just seemed to confirm that initial impression. He has a wonderful sense of humor, gleefully playing with stories and phrases from our ancestors, throwing them out at unexpected yet often appropriate times. Here is someone obviously steeped in Zen, embodying our lineage. So tonight, his position is confirmed. How wonderful, how marvelous. What about the story that I started these comments with? Perhaps that choice will be clearer after I read the following poem from Mary Oliver, one of my favorite poets, entitled Wild Geese. You do not have to be good. You do not have to walk on your knees for 100 miles through the desert repenting. You only have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. Tell me about despair, yours, and I will tell you mine. Meanwhile, the world goes on. Meanwhile, the sun and the clear pebbles of the rain are moving across the landscapes, over the prairies and the deep trees, the mountains and the rivers. Meanwhile, the wild geese high in the clean blue air are heading home again, whoever you are. No matter how lonely, the world offers itself to your imagination, calls to you like the wild geese, harsh and exciting, over and over, announcing your place in the family of things. So, Sensei, your place among this family is announced tonight. I look forward to much mutual nose tweaking. I say that from over here, by the way. And extend my personal congratulations to you on this joyous occasion.
Thank you, Geese. I mean, Crane.
Go, duck!
Thanks, Terry. Elizabeth King.
I think I'll stand up so I can see people. I had an image of Andrew almost 12 years ago when we took Jukai together, Judith Steed, who is here, and Robert and I, and Andrew, and both David and Joan presided at that, of course. And during the meditation, a long walk of meditation, I was sitting there, and an unexpected guest just plopped into my meditation in the form of an image of a very old man with a long white beard sitting in the lotus posture and holding a teaching stick. And that was a surprise, but even more startling to me was when I saw the guy's face, because it was Andrew's face. It was, and I told him about it afterwards. And but that isn't the only reason why I know that Andrew will be a good teacher. But at that moment, I knew he would be a teacher, and now I know he will be an excellent one. I would like to give a few examples of some of the things that have touched me that you have. The first thing is your wisdom. And I was going to read part of an email that you sent to the afternoon readings group after we had read Annie Dillard's This Is the Life. Well, I guess I'll read part of it. I've crossed that thing. Though we climb the beanstalk to get a larger view, as Annie Dillard expresses it, there are many times that the beanstalk sends a tendril down to grab us, pulling us up and bringing in that longer view. Perhaps in both instances, it's more about how the practice makes us more and more fetchable, I love that word, by such moments, not requiring effort as much as making ourselves available and more open to saying yes to such opportunities. Those are Andrew's words, and he's a wise person and will be an excellent Zen teacher. And then the second quality that I've noticed in Andrew is compassion. A couple of years ago, Robert and I came to a retreat here in October. And at the time, my sister-in-law was dying of leukemia. And so we told Andrew about that because we might have to leave. And after the noon break, or during the noon break, I went downstairs to lie down and see if I could get a little rest. And it wasn't too long before Andrew came down and touched my shoulder and said, "There's been a phone call. I'm sorry, Doris has died." And he was so gentle and empathetic, and he listened to me. I felt really heard, and I haven't known that kind of compassion for a long time, and it was so beautiful. And I want to thank you for that. And then I had another one, but I'm going to skip that one. The last one is a quality that makes a good teacher a remarkably fine teacher, and that is creativity. One time at a retreat out at Bennett Pines, Robert and I were walking back to Abrahaven to our quarters, and some creative person had gathered up a whole bunch of pine cones, and where the pine cones had been scattered, had spelled out a couple of words. And those were, you remember, those words were STUDY space CONES. Think about it. And we found out that creative person happened to be the man who's becoming a sensei tonight. So, and then there was another, one more, that our house at Rohatsu a few years ago, David always took us over to the cabin and we'd sit in front of the fire and share. And Andrew got up with his guitar and sang the Heart Sutra. But it was a heart sutra you have never heard of. Yet had reworded it, and it was funny, and it was profound, and it was fun, and very creative. So the only other thing that that's missing is the long white beard. And
I remember you telling me that.
I noticed you're working on it.
Yeah, I'm starting to gray, and I was like, great, oh, it's coming true.
I thought about bringing a bottle of white shoe polish, along, but my senior self got in the way. Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you, Elizabeth. And now, your father and sister, Al Palmer and Angie Lanfear.
Well, unlike most of you in this room, I've known Andrew his entire life. it's been a great. But just in tune of what I've been learning tonight, I've just a couple stories. I remember when Andrew, he did go to India. Was I nervous? Yes. Did we send him on his way? Yes. And he came back and he had stories to tell us, and he shared them with us, and some of the stories were scary. And one of the interesting stories is he came back and he is at Heathrow Airport. He had no money. So he slept in Heathrow Airport for a night, maybe two, I don't know. But he had like 35 cents to his name. So, but he came back and he taught us something he learned in India. He taught our entire family how to clean our ears out with the ear. He was learning to teach at that point. In another story, back when he was in high school, he went on a retreat with a group of high school students. They went down, they floated the Green River up in Wyoming and up in northern Utah, Colorado. And on that trip, they take 2 days where they just, is it two? I don't know exactly. It was 3 days where they just take each individual and they place them where they cannot see anyone else, cannot hear anyone else. They have to just be by themselves for 3 days. Andrew was there by himself for 3 days. Some of his best friends were some lizards. And he became, I don't know what he talked to them about or what they told him, but lizards was his out. But I remember one thing he came back with, that his instructor that took him, they all had given some names. And tonight was very interesting and it blends in. They said, he came back and he said, Andrew is even killed. So therefore, it blends in with the group right now. So that's a few of the interesting stories. He lived in Gunnison. He went to school in Western State, which is minus 25 degrees below zero, walking to school, 25 degrees below zero, barefooted, uphill, both ways. But your hair will fall out if you don't watch it. I'm learning from him too, and he has already finished learning from me, so you have him to take over.
First of all, I want to say, I think I was probably a bit of assistance when we were little, because I never stopped talking, and so he actually got time to just sit and think about things. But my dad and I were trying to figure out what we're going to say for tonight. I'll try not to get all sappy. And the main thing that came to mind is that you keep us all so grounded. That even when there's trouble and when there's good times, you always have some way to say the right things. I remember there was a fire in my townhome complex last fall, and I called and I said, oh my gosh, I'm freaking out, and I can see it from my house, and
You know, all the what ifs, and Andrew just said, but Angie, it's the what is. You're okay. They've got it under control. And I just, he just knows the perfect things to say. And that we are just so blessed and so fortunate that we've seen you grasp for your knowledge in what you do. You never do anything. If you have your mind set on something, you go for it 110%. And that quest for knowledge and learning and interpreting things, you just have the gentle, kind spirit and a good way of saying it. And so as a family, we're so blessed, and my kids and all of us have been blessed, and I'm glad that that you have such a beautiful community and that you they get to share in the things that we've shared in our whole lives. I look forward to it. See where you went.
You also used to pin me down and tickle me, don't you?
Just wait till we're
go there.
Did William Jevons, was he able to make it? Okay. So, David Cochran.
I'll stand up too, although it'll make me a better target for the stick, so probably a good choice. Well, Andrew and I have been brothers in the Dharma for a decade. Can you believe it's been a decade?
No.
It's been since 2001. And so we've traveled a lot of the elements of the path, and most recently been meditation instructors together, and worked closely with Sarah and Joan, and over these last few years as meditation instructors, me in Pueblo, and Andrew with SMS here in Springs, and it's been fabulous. So the teachings, the way I would characterize Andrew's teaching, grounded, even keel, those are wonderful. And bright, you know, I'm right there with it. And I want to talk about that for a minute. The words that I came up with were gentleness and grace. But there's a self-discipline that moves through it all. And there's an acuity of thought that moves through it all. And I feel like I'm one of these bleeding horses from Suzuki, and Andrew has helped me to accept the teachings in so many different ways. And a good example is Sheng Yin, who's a traditional Chan teacher that we have studied, and I had a hell of a time trying to swallow Sheng Yin. And Andrew was right there to show me the value of that level of our tradition. And so here's a little thing about Sheng Yin. One thing he said one time was, until you have subjected yourself to some discipline, you should not put too much faith in your own willpower. When I saw my own will crumbling at the monastery entrance, I suddenly felt I understood the reason for Niwazumi, which is this kind of subjection of the ego to humility in order to get into the monastery. As one crouches by the bench on the dirt floor, one's resolve is put to the test time and time again. At the entrance to the monastery, I had learned the meaning of courage, which has its roots in faith and which remains undaunted whenever resistance is encountered. And I think you have taught me faith, the Buddhist faith in the true sense of that. And I'm very grateful for that. I know another teacher that Andrew has looked to often and has great appreciation for is Hocklin. So I went to Hocklin because of your enthusiasm about him. And I've got a great story, which I think kind of... I kind of think of Andrew in this story, so that's why I'm sharing it. One day long ago, when Zen Master Xiang Yin Chi Quan was studying under Kei Xuan Ling Yu addressed the following question to him. I've heard you have a brilliant mind. Brilliant mind. They say you're so perceptive that when you were with your late teacher Po Chang, you gave answers of 10 when he asked about 1, answers of 100 when he asked about 10. But that intellectual sharpness and perceptiveness is the very source of birth and death. What I want from you right now is a single phrase that comes from a time prior to your birth. Chiquan, utterly confused, returned to the monk's quarters in a daze. He took out the writings he'd been studying, began to comb them for a phrase he could take back to Ling Yu, but he was unable to come up with a single one. He sighed to himself, "You can't satisfy hunger with a painted rice cake." He begged Ling Yu for some clue that would help him answer. "If I told you something now," Ling Yu replied, "later you would curse me to your dying day. Whatever I said would be mine. It would have nothing to do with you." And that's what Joan tells us all the time. So there's Joan in the story. Chiquan ended up taking all his writings and study notes and tossing them into the fire. "I'll never study Zen again in this lifetime," he said. "I'll go on to an extended pilgrimage. I can beg my way into a mendicant as a mendicant monk. At least I can avoid wearing myself out like I'm doing now." He took leave of Ling Yu, he left, he went on the pilgrimage, and then one day Chiquan was out clearing away some brush and weeds. His sickle struck a pebble, throwing it against the trunk of a bamboo with a sharp talk. At that instant, he attained enlightenment. He hurried back to the monk's quarters and washed to purify himself. Then he lit some incense and bowed deeply in the direction of the temple on far-off Mount Kui, where Ling Yu resided. "The gratitude I owe you for your great compassion is far greater than that I owe my own parents," he said. "If you had given in to my pleas that day and said something to help me, this moment would never have arrived." And I think that way of learning from the world is what Andrew has come to understand. And I'm honored to be your colleague. Thank you.
I wanted to say a few words to Wendy at the end. You know, Wendy, because you were here when Andrew first connected with us, and you connected with us very soon after, that from the beginning, Andrew was very, very dear to this community. And it's as if everything gets larger when Andrew is here, and easier. And the sense of ease, yeah. And I grieved when you guys moved away. I think you know that. And we all celebrated when you came back. And when Ian came back and got to be our first Sangha baby, what seems like quite a long time ago, too. And so it's not, it's Andrew, and it's also you all as a family that have been and are and continue to be such a great gift. And for Andrew to be so large and to bring us so much space and so much ease is a gift that I know that you offer also. And the warmth of your home and the love in your family is present all the time to us in that way. This is a really small token from our community to you that I think to me just sort of represented your something about your kind of beauty.
that part of it.
Talked about how you teach him, and you also teach us. We really love your big heart and your really strong eye that sees. And if you look at it, there's a moon on it. I couldn't find a coral moon for you, but this tiger eye, you see the slim moon on there? Because Ian's name is Carl Moon. So the moon part of it is on your tiger eye part. But when I saw that, I thought, tiger eye, Ian.
You know what's funny is too, whenever we go up to the mountains or anywhere, you know, he looks for rocks that are shaped like a heart. Mm-hmm. That's perfect.
Thank you so much. Andrew, will you please allow me to say one thing? I'm not on the list. I'm also very inappropriately unpredictable. So this, those of you who don't know me, this is my nature. I just wanted to say, and I'll be very brief, that there's no question that you're going to be a great teacher. And I've studied with John and Sarah and David, and your first talk was excellent. And the reason I know that you're going to be a great teacher is I have no idea what you said. The other thing is, you know, I told you about the dream that we have yet to share, and I was trying to think of what to say to you, you know, and I love Shantideva's vow. You know, I try to read this every day, and I kept thinking of, you know, live long and prosper and enlighten many people, like you were Spock or something like that. And I look at your beard, I don't see a gray hair on your beard at all, you know, and in me, well, maybe there's one, me, I don't do beards anymore, you know, because I've been, you know, people think I'm my father now, I'm my brother now. You got, you know, you will live long and prosper, and the part of the dream was a very, very long gray beard, and when I look at you now, and that long beard, that's what it's all about. And I'll share the rest of the dream with you when you get a chance. So I'm sorry for being inappropriate, but I had to do that. So.
Thank you.
Buddha nature prevails the whole universe, existing right here now. The wind blows, waves fall on the shore, and Guanyin finds us in the dark and broken roads. We give thanks to all the ancestors of meditation in the still halls. the unknown women, centuries of enlightened women, bear and jay and mountain goat. Let wisdom go to every corner of the house. Let people have joy in each other's joy. Oh, thus throughout space and time, all awakened beings, great beings, the heart of perfect wisdom.
Vows.